ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by David Pollack and Reese Davis.
The college football playoff is set, a mixture of the old guard and some new teams coming into the mix. And we are also on the night of the annual National Football Foundation College Football Hall of Fame dinner, of which David Pollack is a member of the class of 2020, which will be honored tonight. This is the ESPN College Football Podcast for Tuesday, December 7th. Reese Davis and David Pollack here. And David, I should have the exact numbers right in front of me. Oh, in fact, I might right here because I just got a text. Here we go. 5.47 million people have played college football all time. 1,038, including the two classes who will be honored here in Las Vegas tonight, have been inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. That's 0.02%. 0.02% of all players are Hall of Famers. And you, my friend, are a Hall of Famer. I'm very proud of you, and I couldn't be happier to be here emceeing this dinner tonight because I'm not a part of it, but I wanted to be here to witness it. You getting in the Hall of Fame. It's a great night, a special night, and I hope you soak it up.
Well, it's obviously way better with you here. That's for sure. Having a great friend, it's crazy, man. And I got asked a lot about this and all that stuff, but what it really does, man, is it makes you appreciate your mama. It makes you appreciate your daddy. My dad was my youth league football coach and taught me what the game was, taught me how to love the game. Never asked me to do drills, never asked me to lift weights. Like, he just let me be a kid and let me play football and coach me from when I was 6 years old to when I was in eighth grade. And so it was kind of cool. The only thing cool about it, because, you know, I hate this individual stuff, I'm not a fan of it, but the only thing cool about it was I got to tell mom and daddy and all those coaches and all those people in my life, thank you. Because listen, as much as you want to say it or whatever, these kind of awards are team awards. You play on a good team back in the day, that's what happens. You get all Americans and you get a lot of, you know, shine. But I'd like for you to point out the numbers. That's a small percentage of people that obviously make it in the Hall of Fame. How many people have hosted this banquet? Because I bet the number is even smaller. So that's all I got to say.
out of all broadcasters, I'm doing it for the seventh time. I haven't done it in a number of years, and it's a lengthy process tonight, Davey. So
strap it on, bro. Good Lord.
And only one person will speak on behalf of both classes, and because the dinner did not happen last year due to the pandemic, we're honoring your class and the 2021 class. Bob Stoops will speak on behalf of both classes. He promises 5 minutes or less. We'll see. You know,
I'm going to tell
this story tonight, so I'll give you a little heads up on it. The first time I hosted this dinner at the Waldorf Astoria in New York City, it was 2008, I believe. And this dinner, it's a wonderful, wonderful event. It brings the entire football community together. But it does have the reputation of going deep into the night. Back in the day when Chris Schenkel hosted this event, you know, one of the great broadcasters in the history of our industry, this thing sometimes would run till close to midnight. So it's got the reputation that it runs a long time. We won't run that long tonight. But I'm stepping to the microphone. David, I haven't said one word yet, not one word. You know, the whole they call it the voice of God, which I think you and me probably makes us a little uncomfortable, but that's what they call it. It comes over the PA and introduces me, and I'm stepping to the microphone and I haven't said a word. And for some reason I make eye contact with Bob Stoops, who was sitting out in the audience at a table. He raises his arm with his watch, starts pointing to his watch and giving me a wrap up signal or a signal like, let's get it going. And I'm like, I haven't said a word yet. And believe me, I will remember that tonight if Stoops goes long. So
even if he doesn't, you got to give him one of those regardless.
Oh, no, if he doesn't. Right off the bat. But it'll be a cool night. And I'm very proud of you and happy for you. And it's quite an honor. It's a great community, as you've already found out. The people at the Football Foundation and the Hall of Fame are remarkable. So that's good. Playoff, all set now. Let's look back just a little with the championship game and how it might, SEC championship game, and how it might impact things going forward. Since 2008, when Nick Saban really got it going at Alabama, I always try to be measured, fair, you know, in evaluating all games. And there have been many times over the course of that time that I might have evaluated something, said, well, I could see where this team could give them problems here, that team gives them problems there. But I will say that I don't recall ever being genuinely shocked by a winning performance from Alabama under Nick Saban until Saturday. And it's not that I didn't think Alabama was good. They are good. I still don't think that they are quite what they've been in recent years. Will Anderson notwithstanding, he might be the best defensive player that Alabama's ever had, short of maybe Derek Thomas. He's going to have to do a little more to get in that category for me. But short of him, and Bryce Young's great, but I don't think they're what they've been. I was really genuinely shocked by that performance on Saturday. And I think you were too.
Oh, yeah. And I think a way I would say it was, this is the first time I've seen Nick Saban play against somebody with a better roster. Mm-hmm. I think Georgia's roster is better. Like, but the one thing that holds true, and I went back and I thought about all of these games and all of these matchups, and it still holds true to this matchup. What's the difference? The difference has been the same thing that it was the first time they played into now. The difference is quarterback. I mean, it continues to be the theme. Nick has done an unbelievable job of hitting guys that are guys, that are dudes, that make those second reaction plays that make you, make you play another three snaps and make you play another five snaps and make those back-breaking plays that, that just continually put your defense on the field. I thought it was a great game plan. Like, why am I going to pound my head up against the wall and run the ball up the middle against you and run the ball? I threw the ball over 25 times in the first half, got you tired, got the ball out of my hands fast some, took some big plays, Young scrambled when he needed to. So I think it was a great game plan, a great coaching job. I think Alabama outcoached Georgia. I think they outplayed Georgia on the field. But this, that doesn't make me think that if they play again, which I think they will, that doesn't mean that I think Georgia can't beat them. So I think it'll be interesting to watch. But on last Saturday, it was pretty clear that Alabama was fully ready to go, and Georgia didn't have any answers once they got in the second half.
Well, and, I think the thing is, we talk a lot about the mental side and motivation of teams. And one of Will Anderson's comments after the game was sort of telling to me. He said, paraphrasing here, we're not some underdog. We're not some D3 school. We're Alabama, man. And they played with that type of attitude as if they feel they had – felt they had been disrespected. It's going to turn the other way in the playoff game in the Cotton Bowl, because Cincinnati, two touchdown underdog, undefeated, going to hear how that their struggle with Georgia last year was solely because Georgia was less than interested and had some opt-outs and a couple injuries. They're going to hear all of that. So they're going to be, they're going to have that mental edge going into that game. So how do you see that impact? Because I don't think either Michigan or Georgia will have that in that semifinal, but Cincinnati will. So let's talk about that one first quickly. How do you think it impacts that game? Does it help Cincinnati?
And by the way, that's real. Like, that's not a made up thing. Like, think about life and think about when you're in a situation when you're defensive and you're trying to prove yourself and you're talked down to and you're told X, Y, and Z, or you're threatened, you come out swinging. You come out to prove people wrong. You come out with an edge like, oh, you don't think we can do this? You don't think we can do that? I think it's, dude, Nick, who never gives you jack crap, said, yummy rat poison. Like, he didn't say that. It meant something. Like, it 100% meant something. And so now you're going to give that to Cincinnati because everybody in the world is going to pick Alabama. Everybody in the world is going to talk about good job, group of five. You made it there. That's a cute little story. Great job. We to use your phrase, we busted the glass ceiling. Congratulations, but you got no shot. So I think it works to Luke Fickell's advantage now. And you got to be careful as a coach using that stuff because you don't always have it. So you got to find ways to motivate your team otherwise. But I think Cincinnati will be on edge. And here's the thing, like, I think defense, defense is about energy. It's about effort. It's about, adrenaline and enthusiasm and trying to keep that edge to you. So I do think it impacts the defensive side of the ball, maybe more so than the offensive side of the ball. But I think Cincinnati's really, really good. I do. I think they're good. I think they got a quarterback that can move around and run around and make plays. And I think they do things that can affect Bama in their eyes. And they do things I think that'll be, you know, really, really good. I tell you what, a sneaky thing when I went back and watched that tape, Reese, that I was kind of blown away by Alabama. I'm used to Alabama being so they usually have a really big desire to be in the right play call and to be to scheme it. They were very bland versus Georgia. They weren't getting it. They were not going to beat themselves and go, we're going to do all this miscommunication stuff. If somebody goes in motion, we're going to switch guys and we're going to run with them. And they were like, cover three. Like, you know, we're going to take away this. We're going to take away this stuff and we're going to make Stetson do this, you know, take shots down the field. But we're going to, I was kind of surprised at the lack of, you know, pressure. They did some, but not as much as I would have thought, and not as intricate as, or not as confusing as I would have thought. I think they said, we're going to let them play ball, play fast, and not do too much. So I think Cincinnati has a chance, but let's be honest, they're behind the eight ball. You saw Bryce Young, man. Bryce Young, Jameson Williams, that matchup, Sauce Gardner and Jameson Williams and Kobe Bryant, like, to me, that'll be must-see TV, because we have seen Sauce Gardner do it at an elite level. You want some more rat poison? We ain't seen it against great offenses. We ain't seen it against great speed. Like, so that'll be a heck of a lot of fun to watch.
Let me, and I know you've had a lot going on. I know you've watched Cincinnati a lot all season long. It's my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong here, but they like to play Gardner into the boundary no matter what, right? If Alabama moves Williams around, particularly with the injury to Mechie, and I know Kobe Bryant on the other side for Cincinnati is a really good corner too. Would you move him with Williams? Would you assign it like that, or would you not?
My first inclination would be to say no. My first inclination would be, let's do what we do. We're good enough. We don't have to change what we've done. Kobe Bryant's a heck of a player. Like, I don't, he's going to go, I give him his shot. But here's the thing without Mechie, this Mechie injury is a big deal to me. You know, because you can now double team, you know, you have the opportunity to put Sauce into the boundary. Well, guess what I can do now, Reese? I can double team Jameson Williams if they want to move him away. I can, you know, Belichick's always been such a, and Nick's the same way, right? They always try to do a great job of making you play left-handed, play, you know, opposite of that way you want to play. So I can use other resources away from Sauce Gardner and let him isolate an island somewhere else and take away the other side of the field. But it'll be interesting to see the way they deploy it. Alabama, I think, is going to have to be patient and run the football. And, you know, how about Robinson, by the way? I didn't think he'd play. You know, many times you have, you know, something like that as the running back, you usually say, well, shoot, he's done. Now he's got some couple weeks to get healthy, which will be a big deal for Alabama. But how about the line, man? Like, I've watched this line be very average all year. I've watched them struggle with simple combinations up to linebackers. I watched them against Auburn get the crap kicked out of them play after play after play, you know, seven sacks against Auburn, not understanding the blitzes that were coming. Bro, I didn't see any free rushers, not a one. Like, they did an unbelievable job. So this offensive line, you know, new starting center, obviously right tackle. We've seen some of that movement up front. I thought they were very well coached, and they were ready for everything that they saw from Georgia and made life easier for Bryce Young, especially early in the game.
Yeah, right tackle has been a revolving door. Center's been a bit of a problem. And I was on the sideline before the game and sort of, you know, questioning whether Alabama could block Georgia's front. And one of their staffers said, well, the kid we're putting in at center, he might not be the biggest and strongest yet, even though we think he's good. He said, but he's got a little bit of a mean streak, and he's from the state of Georgia. So, you know, felt a little overlooked, had a little mean streak. And I said, well, that's probably as good a chance as you'll have if you're going to go up against those dudes from Georgia. Having a little bit of an attitude probably helps. It's not just the Mechie injury, too. Alabama may have some other things to deal with, may have some youth. You know, youth that will need to come through in the secondary in that game against Cincinnati, too. So I think that might be a little bit better game than some suspect. Before we move on, two things I want to mention. First, watch NBA Today, Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN and the ESPN app, or listen to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, and listen to The Right Time with Bomani Jones. New episodes Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. On Monday's episode, Bo's doing a little college football talk. He'll dive into Mario Cristobal's move to Miami. Listen to The Right Time with Bomani Jones and wherever you get your podcast, or watch The Right Time on YouTube. We're going to get to those coaching things, but let's talk about the other semifinal. We touched on Georgia a little bit. Georgia and Michigan. I want to give Michigan its due. I think Michigan's really good. I thought that from the early part in the season. This looks like a Jim Harbaugh team. But the giant question about Georgia, and I've sort of gone, I went to the mat. I think Jesse got annoyed with me on the Selection Day show a little bit, because I went to the mat again. I'm not saying I don't think JT Daniels is good. I do. I think he's a good quarterback. I think Stetson Bennett is their best quarterback. Stetson needs to eliminate the 2-3 chances that he gives the other team almost every game. He gave Alabama at least 3 chances, and he only got away with 1 of them. Yeah. I still think that he's their best quarterback. Do you see Kirby Smart making a change at quarterback before the game, to start the game against Michigan?
I think if this was a possibility, Reese, it would have happened last week. I mean, I think you had, when he threw his second interception, I think you had a perfect chance. The game wasn't out of hand, but it was pretty dang close. I think you knew that you were going to lose. I mean, I think that's the spot you go, well, let's see what we got. Like, if it's going to be close, if it's going to be a battle, I think that would have been the opportunity. So, no, I don't. But I will say this. If Stetson Bennett's my guy, I need to run him more. I don't understand that component of it. I would run more design quarterback draws. I would run more, not zone read, quote unquote, but I would definitely stick that in the belly and let me read it a little bit and hold that defensive end off. So I would use more creativity. And they tried to with the Wilt when he rolls out to the right and they run the boot, and Will Anderson plays it perfectly and he throws a pick off it. So I think Stetson Bennett's the best guy. I think Georgia can win a national title with Stetson Bennett. And I know he's not Bryce Young, but how many kids in the country are Bryce Young? I mean, I think he's got enough creativity. He's made enough of the right side. And I'll tell you this, from knowing these Georgia guys, these players and these coaches, they love Stetson Bennett. They freaking love this kid. Like, they love the kid's got a flip phone. He doesn't have he's different, but he's from South Georgia, and he's got something about a man that galvanizes people, and the kids love the crap out of him. He's a dude. He's a dude you love to follow, you love to cheer for. So I think Stetson's the guy. When you turn it to the Michigan side, God, how freaking awesome of a matchup is this? That, right, like two coaches that live in the world of, like, they're both a little eccentric and strange, I would say. They're both different. You give me that? Like, they're,
don't say that's not so. You wouldn't. How? What are you thinking?
Very different. Make no bones about being old school. Make no bones about breaking the other people's will. If you need a presser, go listen to Kirby's halftime speech against Florida. If you need some context to that, I can't say those words. Other shows, I'm sure, at ESPN can get away with that, but I'm not going to say that. But just two coaches that are no nonsense, that build their teams around day one. We are going to hit you in the mouth. We're going to be physical. That's who we are. That's what we are. We will outwork the other team. We will out hit the other team. Show me, bro. Like, awesome opportunity. Nobody thought Michigan would be here at this juncture in the season. Georgia fans probably had some doubts whether they would be here too. And now you get to go out there against two programs that get to go out of that are winning programs, that have won national championship, that are huge brands, that get to go toe-to-toe.
I think there's a perception about this Michigan offense that they only want to run downhill. They do. That's the core of their identity. But Josh Gattis, with Jim's blessing, obviously, has come up with some creativity. They've hit a lot of big plays, both in the running game, and they've hit some big pass plays as well. McNamara's done a great job taking care of the ball. Look, Michigan's going to be Harbaugh's Michigan. They're going to run the ball with Hassan Haskins. They're going to try to get Corum loose. I know that. But I don't think they're going to just try to bang their head into the brick wall. I think they're going to do some different things. You're going to see some gadgets and, maybe some quarterback run here and there. And, you know, they'll use McCarthy if they have to. This is not going to be just Michigan trying to prove they can run over Georgia. They'll do some things to try to be creative as well, don't you think?
Yeah, and offense is eerily similar when it comes to playing tight end, multiple tight ends, and they're bread and butter both teams. They want to run the football. They want to start there. Listen, Michigan's got, you've seen the flea flickers and you've seen the double passes, so they can break those out. I think they do a really good job in their passing game. Here's the thing. McNamara, even when you pressure him, doesn't make a lot of mistakes. Mm-hmm. He also doesn't take a lot of sacks and negative plays. So he knows where his answer is and he knows how to get it out. They run the RPO game attachments off of their run game really well. And you saw it against Ohio State. It's not I'm going to throw 50 yards down the field. It's a quick, RPO to a nub tight end and let the tight end slip out right now. And you want to cheat a little bit, I'm going to throw it to you. The whole game to me, I'm not going to go nerd on you with this X's and O crap and try to, get everybody, confused in that stuff. But basically, can Georgia play the run game with less bodies than you? Like, Ohio State has to bring bodies. Yeah. Everybody who's played Michigan has to bring extra bodies. They can't just go, we're going to line up. They're going to have to bring an extra safety down. They're going to have to bring extra bodies in the box. Georgia's been able to do it all year long with stopping the run with two high safeties. They haven't had an offense hit them in the mouth where they haven't been able to do that. Alabama didn't even try to. They didn't have to because they threw the football. So if I'm going to beat Georgia, to me, it's been precision passing game, anticipation passing game. So you're going to beat Georgia instead of doing what Alabama did and go, I'm going to stay on the outside for Medweather and jab. Do you want to get Mike Tyson? Do you want to get in tight and say, let's see what you got. Let's see what kind of hands you got. Let's see how powerful you are. So are they going to out Georgia? That's what's going to be interesting to me. The clear weakness of that defense is their secondary. Now, can Michigan take advantage of it?
Yeah. Well, that was the game plan for Bill O'Brien.
It was an awesome game.
They were not confident in their ability to win the game up front. They were confident in their ability to stay in the game and perhaps win it in the secondary. Nobody's saying Georgia's secondary is bad. It's just, if you've got to pick something to go after, you're sure not going, to pick those guys up front. And it'll be really fascinating, I think, to see just how Michigan goes about it. Because I felt like that the teams that had before Saturday, and I'm still not so sure I don't feel the same way, even though Alabama won the game, that the two teams who had the best chance to beat Georgia, because of our analogy we've used 10 billion times and I'm tired of, but I'm going to do it anyway, the styles make fights thing. I thought Ohio State had the best chance because of their receiver play and explosive offense, and Alabama was next. I worried about Alabama's offensive line more, but those were the two. I didn't think Michigan was well suited. David, I'm going to give myself a few more days to kind of make sure there's not recency bias there. I think Michigan can win the game. I mean, with absent Georgia mistakes, I think Michigan's good enough to win. I think Michigan's good enough to win the national championship. I'm not picking yet, but it's kind of a gut feeling. I think they're playing. I think the layoff hurts them. If we were continuing to playing this Saturday and the championship next Saturday, I think that would really serve Michigan well. How they'll react to the time off and the momentum and the loss of it, I don't know.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. It seems to me like you have moments within a season, and those moments define what your team will be. And I know that sounds stupid, but a lot of times you got to prove it to yourself. And I think Michigan's now proved it to themselves. Like they now believe they can win. They haven't taken the field a lot against Ohio State and believe they could win. They hope they could win. They thought they could win. This is a team full of seniors, dude. They're not full of underclassmen. This is a team full of suffering, like underperformed, that came to heart with Harbaugh with a dream that I'm going to turn this around. I'm going to change this. And it's been a lot of not of that and a lot of disappointment. So they're calloused, man. Like they're unflappable. Aiden Hutchinson's, you could argue whether he's the best player in the country. By the way, saw him here at the banquet. He's here for some academic thing, which, you know, I never got any of those awards, by the way. You know, he's here, but he's, dude, that's a big son of a gun, man. Like, yeah. He is huge. I didn't realize until I got in person, like, he's every bit of 6'5", 6'6". I mean, he's a large man, but I watch every game and that dude just wrecks game plans. And Ajabo's good. Like, this is a defensive line that has a lot of the recipes that, you know, Will Anderson has, and they can make life very, very difficult for a Georgia offense. Georgia's offense has to play too. And, you know, Michigan's defense is their strength. So, you know, which weakness, quote unquote weakness, I think Michigan's offense is sometimes a weakness for them. Are they going to continue their barrage and continue to play well? Is Georgia's offense going to do what they did during the regular season and play really well? I think that decides, that side of the ball depends or decides the game for Michigan and for Georgia.
Now, I'm really happy that Aiden Hutchinson is a Heisman finalist. I do think that Will Anderson should have been in New York, and that was a surprise to me that he was not. But Hutchinson's deserving of being.
But it's not a surprise because of one reason, Reese. Like, remember, the Regency bias and the way people vote, like, you've got two candidates, and Bryce Young is clearly the front runner. So what does that do? I'm just explaining to everybody else that it takes votes away from him, because the South, most people are going to vote for Bryce Young because of what he just dismantled the best defensive front seven we've probably ever seen in our time covering the game. So that's why. It's not because Will Anderson's not good enough. Shoot, Kenneth Walker's good enough too, bro. Like, he's also another guy that, like, I saw some of the most insane things out of him this whole year. I'm glad Kenny Pickett's there. Like, he's, it's hard to, I can't explain, guys, the company he's in with his numbers and 40 plus touchdowns and 4,000 yards. You're talking about Deshaun Watson. Like, you're talking about, you know, elite guys, the best to ever do it. Like, Tim and James Winston, are the only two that have ever done an ACC football history. Like, he's been unbelievable too. So I think you can make a case for several people, but it's Bryce Young. It's Bryce Young's Heisman.
Yeah, I think so too. And even historically, career-wise, for Kenny Pickett passing Dan Marino. I mean, he played more. You can say, you know, Kenny played more games, longer season, all that stuff. I got it. Before we wrap up, let's talk some of the coaching hires and some of the coaching moves. And I would like to say that, you know, that Miami was their search was unprofessional and chaotic. But I think I shouldn't say that, because that would be an insult to unprofessional and chaotic searches and moves everywhere. I mean,
ouch.
Look, man, you want to hire Mario Cristobal? Great. No problem with it at all. The people at Oregon are very upset with the way that was handled, you know, from the things I've read and heard. What I took offense to, or what bothered me, was not the firing of Manny Diaz. We all serve at the pleasure of our employers. Contracts are made to be paid out and people sent on their way. That's just the nature of the beast in coaching. But the whole, well, if we get him, then you're fired. But if we don't get him, well, you can stick around and twist in the wind for a little longer, I thought was very unbecoming, not what you want to represent as a program. And I thought it was bad. That said, Mario Cristobal is an excellent recruiter. He wants to be there. He's got family ties there. It's his school. So I understand the desire to do it. But if you want to fire the other guy. Don't disrespect him on the way out, the way it appeared to me that Miami did. I don't know. Maybe Manny knew the whole deal and it wasn't, but publicly, it looked really, really bad in my judgment.
Well, and you're asking him to go recruit and talk about the Miami brand when that's lingering over his head, and you're hearing it on TV and you're hearing it all over the place. So I don't disagree with you. I mean, if you're a Miami fan, like, you're probably happy with the commitment the football team's making. Like, they're spending money. They're making football a priority, which, you know, is a big deal. This is a couple fold for me. One, you know, leaving Oregon, where you have better facilities, better players, better recent history for sure, is interesting. We've seen this in the coaching carousel, by the way, though. I mean, people are leaving jobs that look like you might possibly go into a worse situation, but I think he's going home. But I'll say this, and this isn't to be disrespectful, but I haven't seen enough from Mario Cristobal that you're going to justify what you're paying him. I haven't. I mean, I think, you know, to be fair, I've seen him. I've seen the clock management thing for years now, and that's bothered me. This is also the same coach, Reese, that literally, if, I mean, I don't have anything in my room to grab. I mean, a baseball bat would be apropos of what Kyle Whittingham just did to him. I mean, they just physically just beat him upside the head with it. I mean, so you're going to Miami. If I'm a coach of Miami, I'm going Pittsburgh's and Wake Forest are playing the ACC championship game. I should get better players than them. I should be able to beat them. Clemson's obviously been the juggernaut, but it's a league that's winnable. It's a league that's you should compete in every single year. Cristobal will get players. Will Cristobal, you know, get a great staff around him? He's going to have to pay a great staff too with the money, and I think that'll determine a lot whether he's successful. I don't consider this a home run. He's one of those coaches that I go, oh, Miami's back. Like I don't put him in that category of coaches that would change the culture or that would change the franchise right now and say, oh, he's going to go take them to ACC championships every year in playoffs.
It does. The one thing that I am confident is it changes the whole recruiting paradigm in the state of Florida just changed because of Mario being in Miami and Billy Napier being at Florida. I don't think it's accurate to say that Alabama, Georgia, and Clemson have gone into there and been able to pick and choose, but it is accurate to say that all of them, particularly Alabama, has had, and they'll continue to do so for as long as Saban's there. They've had great success there, and now maybe the road's going to be a little bit harder because at least in some of the years, a couple of the guys that helped Alabama have great success there were Billy Napier and Mario Cristobal when they were on staff there. So, and Georgia's recruited, they recruit nationally now. So it's going to be really interesting in the state of Florida for recruiting. Let's hit another one real quick. Brent Venables. The first time I sat down with Brent Venables before the 2000 national championship game when Oklahoma beat Florida State. And I remember it was the first time I'd met him, first time I'd spent any time just, you know, one-on-one talking with him. And I walked out of that meeting and said, that guy is going to be a head coach. 21 years later, he's finally a head coach. Now he's had opportunities that he's turned down. Now he's the head coach at Oklahoma. What do you think of the hire?
I think it's a good hire. I think there's a lot going on at Oklahoma right now. Like your coach left. There's so much chaos with recruits leaving left and right. I think you bring in somebody that knows Oklahoma, that loves Oklahoma, that spent so much time there, had so much success. I think that immediately recruiting is going to come back together. A defensive coach that he's coached defense at a high level for a long time. Like he's this dude. I mean, he's just elite. And he brings energy and passion. Like, he's had his own get back coach for years because he needs it. Cause he's going to be on the field hitting somebody. Like he's just got an infectious personality. Lebby being the OC again, what does he have?
Is that definite? Have they announced that yet? I know that.
I don't know if it's announced yet, but I've heard it from enough people to feel like it seems like it's pretty likely. And again, I think that's important. An Oklahoma guy with ties that brings a love and a passion for the university. I also think that, when you look at Oklahoma, it's a team that's been built on offense and substance and sizzle. And I think having a guy that you know can bring that same sizzle and bring some pop, I think will be good. But, you know, I think Oklahoma's in a strange spot, Reese. I don't bet on this brand going forward being what it is right now. I think it's going to the SEC. It's going to be – listen, I fully believe it's why Lincoln Riley left. I think you look at what he's about to come into and what they're about to face in the SEC, it's going to be really difficult. It's going to be a real, real challenge. It's not going to be easy. You're not going to be the premier brand in your conference anymore. It's going to take, it's going to take some good leadership. It's going to take time. It's going to take development. It's going to take all those things. So I think Venables is a good hire. I'll put it to you like this. I am 1,000. I don't talk to people. I don't have connections like you and Kirk. I don't have a lot of connections in the business stuff. I'm 1,000%. I can tell you this with 1,000% certainty. It wasn't the first guy that got offered the job. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that. Like, there's other people they wanted to go get, but this is a good fit. This is a good guy that can come in. I think you know exactly what you're getting from Brent Venables.
I think the thing you're alluding to, Oklahoma's got the tradition is as rich as any in the sport, but there are some questions. And look, when they get to the SEC, they'll have a lot of money. They already have a lot of money. But relative to the other power programs in terms of access to additional revenue, commitment to that, I had someone tell me just the last few days, where do you think Oklahoma is going to rank in that? They're going to be kind of in that middle third of the SEC, yet they will be expected to produce college football playoff appearances, conference championships, just as they always have delivered throughout their long and storied history. And it's much more difficult. Lincoln Riley now is at a place where he is the top dog. You know, they are number one. Certainly Oregon can match in terms of revenue and benefactors with Phil Knight, but USC is well-heeled too, even if the Trojans haven't always spent it. But now they probably will. And you're at the top instead of, can we get to the top, you know, in terms of those things, not in terms of history or tradition, Oklahoma's matches up with anyone, but in terms of those things that you'll need to compete in the modern day. So that's, I think I have no questions about Brent on the field. I think like you, that it's a great fit for Oklahoma. I'm happy to see him get his opportunity. And I would assume that by leaving a place where he was very comfortable and very happy, by all accounts, that he is confident in the alignment that it will take to make sure that they maintain their place and that they are spending with the Georgias and spending with the Alabamas and what Florida apparently is now prepared to do. I read an article that was pretty good that I guess for years and years, even the Urban sometimes at Florida, they said, well, Spurrier didn't have that. You know, and now they're realizing, you know, well, okay, that doesn't work anymore. So anyway,
do you think there's any chance Chip goes back to Oregon?
Yeah, I do. I wouldn't say that was the favored scenario, but I don't think Oregon would be averse to that. He didn't leave with. I don't think he left. My understanding of it. You said I had connections. I don't have a connection in this realm with Phil Knight that would tell me exactly how he feels about that. But from what I've read and, you know, people around the program that you talk to, I don't think there were any hard feelings about Chip's departure the way maybe there are about the last two departures with Mario Cristobal and Willie Taggart, but, you know, before that. So because of that, maybe, but you know, Chip, I don't know. Does Chip want a fresh set of downs? I don't know. I mean, we'll see.
It's hard. It's hard to win at UCLA. That's not an easy job to have. Chip's a heck of a football coach, an X of an O coach. I just wonder if he's how willing he wants to go recruit and be a part of the rat race of that. That's a tough
because,
thing, dude.
Because Lincoln's not bothered by that.
Lincoln's a young man. Like, dude, when you've been in this business for a while, you've been around it enough recently. Like, it's exhausting. Like, these coaches, they're getting paid a ton of money. And I hope y'all don't look at that and go, oh my God, they don't have lives. Yeah. Like, the elite coaches, they literally are on the phone all the time talking to recruits and always recruiting. And it's a tough life that they live. Listen, I know they get compensated well for it. Listen, I'm not a guy that's money's everything. Money's money, but you know, it's definitely, if you're going to be, it's a young man's game. You better find some dogs on your staff that will go get it, like go hungry to recruit. Nowadays people are way more inclined to hire recruiters than they are coaches.
Yeah.
Like, recruiters versus X's and O's. I know they're all coaches, but is this guy an elite recruiter? Okay, we can teach him some football stuff. He knows enough, but this guy's going to go get me some freaks. I'm good.
Yeah, get him. Get your X's guys as your coordinators. David, it's fun as always. Again, we started the podcast this way. Going to end it this way. Congratulations, man. Three-time All-American, College Football Hall of Famer. It's really cool. Really, really happy for you. Hope you enjoy this evening and the entire ceremony.
Thank you, brother. It's weird. I didn't get a suite. I see that suite behind you. I'm in the, you know, little small little room. It's strange.
I don't even want to hear it. And by the way, David is wearing grown-up shoes tonight with his tuxedo, sort of.
You want to see it? You want to see him? I can show him to you if you want me to see it.
Now, are they red?
They're phenomenal. Hold on.
Okay. This is how, for those of you who are going to watch, but look at those, man. For those of you just listening, he has some red sparkly loafers that he's wearing with, what brand are those?
I don't know. You know, that. Are you going to ask me that? I don't know. Yeah, just
read the brand. Like Gucci, maybe, or something, are they?
They are not Gucci. You know that.
Bergamo?
No, they're Bravo, whatever that is. I don't even know what that is.
But that's fitting. Bravo. Bravo, Pollock, for wearing grown-up shoes and getting in the Hall of Fame. Hey,
yes, sir.
I'll see you next podcast.